fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
For me, the next movie, and it's not even, I don't even know if we could just call it one movie. It's a series of movies about one character and all made from sort of different people. And I am talking about Captain America. And I'm not talking about this last Captain America movie. I'm talking about the Captain America 1979 TV movie.
Oh, yeah.
Its sequel, Captain America 2. Death Too Soon. See, it's so bad that the sirens are coming. The
They're coming for you. That's what happens to anybody who talks about that.
Who talks about these And then, last but not least, Captain America, the 1990 movie starring Matt Salinger, Ronnie Cox, Ned Beatty, Darren McGavin, and Melinda Dillon.
Is that last movie part of those TV series?
No, it is not. It is a complete revamp. The first two movies. So apparently, CBS. I believe it was CBS. CBS was kind of superhero happy in the 70s, and I think they did Wonder Woman the first season. They did The Incredible Hulk, and they tried to do Captain America as well. And Captain America, they did as a TV movie. They did a first one, and I guess it must have been so successful that they did a second one.
And no, actually, what they did is edited together episodes from the series into a movie. Yeah.
Oh.
For the second one?
Yeah.
Oh. So it was a TV movie, and then it was a series.
Yes, a very short-lived series. So then what they did is... If I'm not mistaken, the first one it was like just a television film, you know, like that was a movie.
Yeah.
Then they did a sequel, which was, you know, sort of more or less the pilot for it. But it, you know, as far as I know, those are the only things that exist. But the idea was that it would become a series.
Gotcha. So yeah, but this the original night. Corey, have you ever seen it?
I saw the movie. I saw the 1990 movie, but I've never seen either of the TV specials.
Oh, my gosh. Really? You didn't see them growing up or anything?
No.
Oh, my gosh. I remember.
I saw it on TV.
Me too.
When it aired, and man, was I disappointed.
You are not the only one. Captain America, and they redo the whole origin where apparently, well, they sort of redo it, where apparently there was a Captain America in World War II. And this guy in the 1979 movie is his son. And something happens. I can't remember exactly what. But the government recruits him. And even though he's already as big as an ox anyway, they give him the super here it's called, what is the soldier?
Flag.
Flag.
It's flag.
The flag formula. And they inject it into him.
Short for full latent ability gained.
Nice.
Wow.
Awesome. And
that sounds like a... That sounds naughty.
And it's so bad, it's good. Like, that's how bad it is. And it's... I remember seeing this as a kid, and it was one of those things where it was nerd denial. It's the only way that you can explain it. It's why I loved Howard the Duck when it came out in the movie theater as a little kid, because they were just doing something about comic books, you know? And, you know, I remember him showing up in the costume and just being like, that's not right.
Well, first of all, the whole thing feels like more like an episode of Knight Rider
than
anything else.
Yeah.
You know, the costume is really, really bad. But the worst part of it is, you know, he's, you know, as Captain America, he rides a motorcycle, right? So instead of, you know, sort of a hat or a cowl or anything like that, he's got this motorcycle helmet.
Giant helmet. It's with, giant.
And it's huge. And he doesn't have like a mask on the front. He's got like this little, you know, sort of, it's sort of a motorcycle visor that's sort of yellowy.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
It's got the wings painted on the side, and it's so
that's big. His costume?
Yeah.
Well, that's the helmet part of his costume.
Right.
Yeah.
But he wears that as his costume. He doesn't like take it off.
No, he doesn't take that off. That's his Captain America. Like that's how he obscured. And it just makes it's so round. He looks like one of the space balls.
Yeah, he definitely does. He almost looks like one of the space balls. And it's funny. It seems like for the sequel, or the series or whatever it was, that they redid the costume a bit more to look like the comic book, where they gave him, because in the original one it's like he's got a star on his chest and he's got stripes coming down the side into almost like a V to his belt.
Uh-huh.
And then it seems like the other image that I found on here, he's got a costume more in line with the comic books. But the thing I remember being horrified the most as a little kid was that the shield is the white stripes are transparent, so it's like it's a plexiglass like transparent disc, and it's got the red stripes and the star is blue in the middle of it. And I just remember feeling like, even as a little child, excited that Captain America was on TV, that this sort of maybe gave me some sort of validation for liking comic books. But then seeing the costume and thinking, yeah, that's not right. And, you know, having seen Wonder Woman and the Hulk, I think the Hulk probably premiered before this.
Mm-hmm. It did.
And thinking how much they got right on those. Excuse me.
This just got everything wrong.
Yeah. Did he throw the shield?
He did throw the shield, I think.
And how did they do that? How did it look?
It looked like a frisbee.
Yeah, it looked like a frisbee. It was really bad.
First one, he doesn't throw the shield except during the moment where he actually gets the shield, when they're issuing his equipment to him before his first mission, and really you see the shield sort of slowly gliding down over the lawn,
and
he catches he catches it with his hands. And it's just like, what you can see that, you know, I mean, literally, you know, my dog could run faster than that shield.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's really bad. Mm. But, you know, I mean, we could go on track. Reb Brown is just not a very good actor. The guy who plays, and that's his name, Reb Brown, right?
Reb
Brown. R-E-B. Yeah, and the guy is the size of a linebacker. I mean, he's a big dude, but he, you know, as they say, God does not give with both hands. His acting ability, I'm not insulting his intelligence because I don't want him to come after me. He's still alive.
Let's put it this way. Most of his, like, you know, other performances are in movies where, you know, he's credited as, like, enforcer or
bouncer.
Or,
he's not a great actor.
However, he was the lead of the 1983 classic Yor, Hunter from the Future.
I don't think I've ever seen that. I'm gonna have to rent that.
It is bad movie goodness.
Well, so let's stop trashing a 1970s Cap and move on to 1990s.
Before you do that, though, you remember who played the bad guy in second one?
No,
Christopher Lee.
Oh, really?
Christopher Lee was the bad guy.
It's
in there,
one redeeming quality.
So Reb Brown, you know.
Who were the bad guys? Was it anybody?
I don't remember.
I think it says here that the bad guy in the second one's name was General Miguel.
Yes, of course the bad guy's Latin. Of course he would have to be. Great. All us Latin people are, you know. Yes.
Christopher Lee, the Latin. Reb Brown has acted next to Christopher Lee, you know.
I know.
Next to a Hammer horror icon, so, you know, good on him for that.
Well, okay, so while we're on the redeeming qualities of Captain America 2, Death Too Soon also has Connie Selica in it.
Yes.
There you go. Can't anything with Connie Selica is okay by me.
I gotta say, some days it's good being Reb Brown.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe he got to kiss her. So Captain America 1990.
Woo!
I remember my memories, Captain America 1990. I remember being in a movie theater in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey, and leaving a movie and walking out to the lobby and seeing the poster for this. They actually had posters for this that they were...
Coming spring 1990 to theaters
exactly.
everywhere.
And it was
I remember that poster.
Nicely put together poster. I remember seeing it, and it really got me excited. And I remember reading about it in comic book magazines, and it just did not come out. Like, just never came out until it was released direct to video. And the way I got to see it was there was a place in Los Feliz where I used to live, Los Feliz, thank you very much, where Jerry's Video, they carried all these obscure videos, and they had a copy. And I was like, oh my God, this is a Captain America. Like, oh my God, and running home. Like, of course, at this point, I'm like 20-something, you know, still excited about seeing, like, this Captain America. And I'd heard that well, like, okay, that's the big thing, right? The big one, well, not the big flaw. I mean, the movie's completely flawed from beginning to end. There are some nicely shot moments, but the Red Skull is not a Nazi in this movie. He's an Italian fascist, right? Or an Italian.
Right, yes, that's right.
And from what I understand, the reason that they did that was because some of the film's backers might have been German.
Yeah.
Which is really weird, because the guy who produced it is Menahem Golan.
Golan, yeah.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Golan, yeah.
Yeah, Golan, who produced another thing on our list, Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, as well as other stinkers as Masters of the Universe. And so he's Jewish. So why does that guy have a problem? He's Israeli. Why does he have a problem with the Red Skull being a Nazi? So... Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. You know, this was a very low budget movie, as most of Golan's movies are. And the director of this movie actually is one of my favorite pulp directors, Albert Pune, who did The Sword and the Sorcerer.
He did
Nemesis.
Cyborg.
Yeah. I mean, the guy actually is the guy does low budget really well.
Yeah.
You know. And but you know, obviously it seems like they may have spent I don't know, maybe 2 weeks putting this thing together.
Yeah.
You know, I do know, because of the Nazi thing, I do know that there are times where a lot where forms of entertainment they sidestep it. I mean, that happens a lot. I think it's because it's such a touchy, controversial, serious thing, and sometimes they feel like, I don't know if we want to get this heavy, let's just make them Nazi-ish.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so.
Well, which they did in the recent movie, right? I mean, technically,
right.
He's not a Nazi.
Yeah, they found a way to avoid a lot of the troublesome Nazi iconography, you know, by making him by making it Hydra or
right,
you know,
which is
you
a
know,
good.
The,
That's a
yeah,
good fix.
It was a good compromise. I mean, let's face it. You don't want to like roll out a bunch of kids' toys that have swastikas
all
over them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't disagree with that at all. But to make him Italian just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. It's just like
that
really
is weird.
Weird.
Yeah. I remember watching this on maybe TV somewhere. I don't know. It was played on TV somehow. And I just remember it. The first time he throws the shield, and I just started bursting out laughing. It was just looked so goofy.
Oh my God! It's
big
so
old, and it just bounced off, and it was just like boing. And
it's so funny because you could tell that they tried to get so much stuff right, like with just Captain America himself. You know, that's what sort of
his costume looks good.
What's
except
that?
Except for the. Costume. He said the costume looked good, except for the rubber ears.
Yeah.
That's
well,
that's
the biggest problem. Obviously, they made those rubber ears. I don't know why. If it was uncomfortable or it looked stupid, like, you know, they were
it did look stupid.
No, I mean they looked stupid.
Mission accomplished.
No, I mean if they looked his real ears looked stupid, like popping out of like a headpiece or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, you know, so those were obviously supposed to be like real ears, not like fake ears on a you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So, but it obviously didn't pan out that well. So.
And
I just
kind of
think
frustrating
that,
too, because it feels like everybody in the movie really was sort of trying to put out a good product. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Salinger, J.D. Salinger's son.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, when one of the that's one of the strangest footnotes ever. Because I think this is like his only sort of big, you know, acting role.
Yeah.
I think so.
But you know, but he was he wasn't bad. You know, he's obviously not you know, seasoned. You know, but and you know, and then there were a few things, you know, like you know, have like the kid who took the photograph when the missile was over DC.
Oh,
you know,
gosh,
you know, like there are some. You know, it's like they tried. They really did try.
Yeah. Yeah,
I have a hard time including these older Marvel movies on a worse list because it was such a untested, sort of unproven genre, and the special effects just could not be there, and they just had, you know, they had to try and convince studios that why they should be faithful to the comic in any way, and so I think, you know, I'm always a little more forgiving for these older ones because, like, yeah, they tried, you know.
Yeah, but they're still really bad, Corey.
They are.
I mean, I understand that you tried, but we're talking, this is 1990. The Burton Batman movie had already come out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a lot of things happening, like, in making, or movement going on with, like, superhero movies. And I'm not saying that their hearts weren't in the right place, or they weren't, like we just said, like, that they weren't trying to do something good, but I mean, a bad movie is a bad movie, and obviously some of the changes that the writers made or the producers made in this 1990 Captain America movie are, you know, just story-wise are mm-hmm. kind of silly anyway. But there is a lot of stuff in there that they do, which they do for the fans in this movie, like, you know, they have a character, his girlfriend's named Bernie, you mm-hmm. know, in this movie, and you know, there's a lot of, like, little things in there, but there's so much other stuff that is just out of left field that you're just like, what were you doing? It seemed like there were two crews on this film, or two sets of producers, or two people, you know, vying for control. You know what I'm saying? And it just seems to all have fallen apart because they're all great actors. I mean, you know, Ronnie Cox, Ned Beatty, Darren McGavin, Melinda Dillon, you know, Bill Mumy. You know, it's like there's all these characters. There's all these people who have done solid work. It just ended up being a really bad, you know, production. And then even when you go back, like, there's still stuff that's sort of considered bad by today's standards that I still think is sort of good, like the original Battlestar Galactica or the original mm-hmm. Hulk TV show, or, you know, even while I was sick for the past week and my daughter was sick for the week before that, we watched some of the Linda Carter Wonder Woman, and yeah, they're not great, but there's still an entertainment value that you get out of it, and you're just like, not like, really, you know, just looking at it, just mm-hmm. like, so for this, like, Captain America, as much as I, you know, and Albert Pion, it's really funny because they recently released this MGM through their on-demand service, the 1990 and mm-hmm. Movie, and I saw on Facebook like last year that Albert Pion was doing a director's cut, and he's like, I've got a director's cut that I'm releasing, and that he was giving, selling to people. And I asked him if I could get a copy. I emailed him his rep through Facebook, and I was like, I'd like to get a copy. You know, I write for Ain't It Cool. Mm-hmm. And they sent me a copy. I paid for it. I did not ask for it for free. I paid for it. I said, I'm willing to pay for it. You know, whatever you want. You know, I just want to see it, you know. And I paid for it, and he sent it to me, and the quality was horrible. I'm not talking about the film itself. I mean, I'm not talking about that the movie was bad. I'm talking about that
the print.
The print was horrible. And apparently it was taken from a print that he was given when he was asked to leave the movie. So I don't even know that he was fully involved in the whole finished product. But I can tell you now that if you're and I ended up not writing a review for it because, like, I'm like, look, I approached this guy, I'm not gonna trash his film, but I can't write a review saying, like, you should pick this up because it's gonna complete something that you haven't, it's not gonna make your experience with this movie any better than it already was. You know, it's still bad, you know.
Well, I think, you know, if anything, though, like with the 1970s Captain America and this one, the 1991, like, it really makes me appreciate how good the last one was.
Oh yeah,
because you do see how hard it is to really get it right. You know, Captain mm-hmm. America is one of those characters that will just be ridiculously silly
yeah.
if you don't do it exactly right. The yeah. shield being a big part of that.
Yeah, yeah,
and the nice thing about, you know, the bad things, you know, is that it does help us appreciate it. When somebody does do it right, it's such a relief.
Yeah, yeah, which is why I loved the last one. I mean, it's not the greatest movie of all time, the last one, but it they pulled it off. And I remember sitting there in the theater just feeling like very much sort of the feeling like when I watched The Rocketeer, which is the guy directed the same movie, sitting there and feeling a feeling of nostalgia and, you know, and loving the scenes with the Dr. Erskine and Steve Rogers, and where they're like discussing what, and it's like, wow, they made a movie about a guy who wants to be a hero again. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I just felt like we hadn't really had that in a long time. So that's why I appreciated that. But oh, poor Captain America. Like, Superman and Captain America are two of my favorite characters of all time, and they had so many crappy
They've
movies.
Just been savaged.
It's just so sad. But Paul, you got another one?
Oh yeah, let's see. What did I tell you guys this morning? I knew that Batman and Robin
Punisher.
Would be. That's it. That's the one I was thinking of. The Punisher, and I'm thinking specifically of which. You know, Corey asked me, oh, which Punisher are you talking about? Are you talking about the Dolph Lundgren Punisher? Or are you talking about the Thomas Jane Punisher? I am talking about the Thomas Jane Punisher. uh-huh. Not the Dolph Lundgren, because actually, in the Dolph Lundgren Punisher, I think we could lump in with that Captain America movie right there. It's the same production group.
Right.
You know, they didn't know what to do. Yeah, I believe so. I think it was a Canon group too. Wow. You know, they didn't know exactly what to do with that character. You know, but the biggest complaint I have about that is that, you know, he never really wears the costume. You know,
yeah.
You know, he's just sort of an anonymous vigilante in terms of, but it is effective. You know, I think it's a pretty effective movie. Where the Thomas Jane Punisher goes off the rails completely, because it doesn't know what kind of a movie it is. You know, is it a comedy? Is it an action? Is it, you know, a revenge movie? And I feel really bad, because I wanted to like this movie, and I do like parts of it, but the main thing is that it wasted Thomas Jane, who
yeah.
I mean, if you've ever seen, you guys saw that that short that he made, that, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
I mean, this guy could be the most awesome Punisher ever. And I feel like that got wasted, and a lot of that blame on that falls on John Travolta's villain.
Oh, there. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can't blame yeah. John Travolta. You can only blame
No,
the
but,
people
I mean,
who wrote
the script. But I mean, that villain, the villain is silly, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, the big fault with that movie, and I think it was trying to be too many things and to too many people, and I think it was trying to be too many things to too many Punisher fans. I think that the problem with the Punisher is that he is a very simple character. There's not a lot that you need to pull the Punisher off, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that the one thing that you need is a villain that is absolutely, completely reprehensible, so that when he becomes the Punisher, or when it's mm-hmm. time to go out and kick some bad guy ass, mm-hmm. that you are behind him all the way, no matter how rough he gets, no matter how tough, no matter what guns, no matter, you know, it's Death Wish, it's Dirty Harry,
right.
it's
right.
you have
right.
to have a do. You have to have villains that are so terrible, and that's that. Like you said, the big flaw is that the John Travolta character is not evil enough.
No,
you
he's
know?
So campy, you know?
And he's very campy.
And you know, one of the things that, Corey, you had said that you liked, that they did include some of the over-the-top stuff from the, like, Garth Ennis...
Yeah, see, that's what I don't like.
...Punisher thing. And And I think if that had been the movie that they were setting out to make, you know, if they would have been, you know, like Garth Ennis's Punisher, then that would have worked, because Garth Ennis at least is consistent in his tone, you know, through his comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, I you know, I agree. I mean, I don't think it was the... I certainly would never put it on a, you know, best of list or anything like that. But when I when I watched it in the theaters, and I was more... I went in thinking, I'm probably not going to like this, because I remember it was in, you know, set in Florida. There was, like, a lot of changes versus, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
And I
went in, and I just... I was not... It was... I was okay with it. I was just like, okay, I'll take that. You know, like, it wasn't the worst thing in the universe. And you know, I see what you mean. I mean, I agree. I know that I sort of have the minority opinion on this movie, where it is a little maybe inconsistent. But for some reason, I didn't mind it. I agree. The Travolta character. That's a good point, actually, about the villain, and that he was sort of silly. But I didn't hate it.
See, I just think, like, what I had said before is that it's trying to be too many things to too many people. What I meant was too many things to too many different Punisher fans. Like, there's people mm-hmm. that love that Garth Ennis stuff, and then there's people like me who love, like, the Stephen Grant, like, original, like, I'm the Punisher, you're a drug dealer, and I'm going to fucking kill you. Like, that's it. Like that's what I used to enjoy about the Punisher when I was a teenager. Like, growing up in New York City, in and around New York City, seeing, like, the dirty subways, seeing, you know, growing up in that 70s sort of New York where you didn't feel safe on the subway. You didn't feel, you know, that's the Punisher. Whereas Garth Ennis, like, as good as a writer as I think he is, he wrote one of my comics of all time. I think mm-hmm. that he wrote Preacher, you know, which is one of my favorites of all time. But I think beyond Preacher, not really having been exposed to his work before Preacher, after Preacher, it just seems he's so wrapped up in so much juvenile nonsense. And that's what I didn't like about Ennis's run, is that so much of the humor is like, really? Like, this isn't necessary. It's just like, you know, it's just, you can't, can you not do anything else? And can you not just sort of do it straight, you know? Yeah. And so that was my disappointment, and that's not what I wanted to see in a Punisher movie. That's just me, which is why, to a certain extent, and I'm going to disagree with you on who the best Punisher is, I think Ray Stevenson in Punisher Warzone, which is not a good movie, but to me, Ray Stevenson looks like the character, is mm-hmm. as intimidating as the character, and that outfit that he wears with the skull spray painted on his flak jacket, and I'm looking at the poster right now, that to me is the Punisher. Like, that's what I picture him looking like. You know?
I never saw that movie.
Neither did I.
It's not a great movie, I'm going to tell you right now. It is not. But if you took Ray Stevenson, forget about Thomas Jane, I mean, nothing against Thomas Jane, but if you took Ray Stevenson, by now, maybe he's gotten a little too old. I don't know. He was just in Dexter, but the latest season of Dexter. But if you took that guy and you gave him an amazing script, that would be the greatest Punisher movie, and probably one of the best vigilante movies I would ever imagine being made. Like, that's one of those movies that, like, you know how you have movies where you're like, oh, when I die and I go to heaven, I'll finally get to see the Batman directed by Martin Scorsese, or, you know what I mean? Like, that to me, like, Ray Stevenson as the Punisher directed by Martin Scorsese or Quentin Tarantino, blam, like, that to me would be the greatest. Because as much as I like Thomas Jane, I still don't physically see him as the Punisher, whereas Ray Stevenson, just physically, he, like, in that movie, and just even in the press stuff that you look at, mm-hmm. he looks like the Mike Zeck Punisher, you know, Mike Zeck, who drew the Punisher from the 80s in that awesome miniseries that, you know, basically established the character, you know, by Stephen Grant. You know, and it's just like, that to me is, I would recommend, just for a sense of, like, maybe completism, completist or whatever, to rent Punisher Warzone, because I think that Patton Oswalt really loves this movie for some reason. I think he had a screening at the New Beverly like a couple years ago, and he was like, I love this movie or something. They were publicizing that he was going to screen a bunch of his favorite movies, and I think it was Patton Oswalt. I could be wrong, but to me, like, I was like, well, I don't get your love for the movie, but I get your love for Ray Stevenson as the Punisher.
Yeah,
because
I think one of the underserved sectors of Punisher fans in is the Bill Mantlo Punisher, where he's shooting jaywalkers.
Oh, really? Gosh, I don't think I ever read that.
Yeah, and before his 80s stuff started, he kept having cameos in Spider-Man and various Spider-Man books.
Yeah.
And at one point, he's just, like, totally insane, and he's just like, somebody jaywalks, and he shoots them.
Oh, man.
And that's the scene. That's it.
So that's when he's a villain, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah.
Yeah, because for anyone
but it's
who
like, I mean, it's so over the top. It's just like, what's the intent with this?
Well, you know, Spider-Man had to have a villain to fight, right? And yeah. That's so funny that somebody like that just became so popular that...
It is.
That, you know, all of a sudden he's like a hero and, you know, fighting drug runners. And I think The Punisher was actually one of Jim Lee's first books, too, like Punisher Warzone. I think Jim Lee was illustrating on that book, too. Like, it's funny because, like, it's just so amazing to me, like, characters like The Punisher and characters like Venom,
Wolverine.
Who, to me, just seem so simple and not really all that interesting, have become so iconic in the Marvel and comic universe, right?
I think Wolverine was like that too.
Yeah.
I think what it is that it starts out as something, you know, very, again, fanboy projection, you know, kind of thing. That's like, oh, you know, like, I could be that badass, you know, I could, you know, or totally. Something like that. And people sort of see themselves in it, or they, you know, I know that, like, with me, you know, things that, like, sort of spark my imagination are things where, like, okay, if I'm making that movie in my head, you know, who can I cast there? Who can I see in that, you know? And I think that those are sort of easy ones to cast in your head, kind of, you know? And
yeah, they are kind of one-note characters. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting, though, because, I mean, Superman was sort of a simplistic idea when he first started, right? I mean, he was just...
Yeah.
You know, champion of truth, justice, and, you know, I'm here to... So, I think when you start to overcomplicate the characters, which has sort of been, like, what's been happening the past, like, whatever, 20 years, you know, that's when you start to run into trouble, at least with long-term fans.
Yeah, it's like, there's a fine line to walk, you know, between the simple and the overcomplicated, you know, it's like you... And when it works, or when those times where, you know, they do keep to the core essence of, you know, who the character is, but without, you know, too many extraneous, you know, details, or with going too far over that the character's no longer, you know, what the character's all about, which, again, like Superman Returns, you know,
yeah,
in a way, I don't really consider that a Superman movie, because that's not Superman in
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, or Smallville too, to a certain. I don't consider that Superman. It's like you're overthinking the character. It's like, keep it simple, stupid. You know, just keep it simple. Like, just do with the character, and you can develop some stuff, but don't go crazy with it. But what was I gonna? So Corey, what's your next choice?
Well, that was it. There was because Batman and Robin was both mine and Paul's, and then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and then Spider-Man 3.
There's no other superhero stinkers that you can think of?
Well, most of them, you know, I just don't see them, so I haven't seen them. Like, I assume Steel is terrible, but I haven't seen it.
I have not seen Steel either.
You've never seen Steel?
I assume Ghost Rider is...
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
It's like the Simpsons scene. You've seen Tron.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Did you see it in the theater?
Again, where to begin? You know, that awful costume is a good place to start, because, you know, first of all, it's Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
There's no disguising Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, I mean, you know, how can people not know, you know, that this is Shaquille O'Neal? you know, it's you know, and you know, God bless me, he's a wonderful guy. I don't buy him as a weapons designer who works with lasers.
No, I don't think so. He doesn't carry himself as an intellectual, is what you're saying.
Dude, I can buy him as a rapping genie, okay? but you know, I mean, the plot is just, you know, it's the most generic thing, you know. I mean, not that Steel was a great character in the comics.
Okay, yeah,
you know?
Let's start with that, because Steel is one of my most loathed characters of all time in the history of comics, and I hope that doesn't make me sound racist, because I'm not.
Dude,
totally does.
The character itself starts a little racist. I mean, come on, you've got a character named John Henry that carries a hammer.
Yeah, I know. John Henry Irons. It's just, it's so lame. It's like the whole death and rebirth of Superman that, you know, we've all talked about, you know, ad nauseum, and bringing back like a character who's the quote unquote black Superman, but he has no superpowers. He's just like Iron Man, you know. He's just super smart, and he built himself a suit of armor when Superman died, and, you know, figured he would help out, and, you know, and then gets caught up in the reign of the Superman, which is like all these Superman imposters coming out after Superman dies, like in the late 80s or whenever it was. It's just, he's a shitty character, and they just keep trying to establish him as like a linchpin in the DC universe, and it fails every time.
There's no real great motivating force for him, you know what I mean, other than, like, you know, somebody who's like, oh, Superman was a great guy, I want to be like Superman, you know.
Exactly. Super wannabe.
And it just, and this one's even worse in the movie. It's even worse because, you know, you don't have that that Superman inspiring him to do it. It's just a revenge thing.
Yeah. You know?
I was wondering how they got around that. I mean, they don't have the S. I mean, what are they?
There's no S. What it is that you know, he quits his job because he realized, you know, one of his weapons resulted in one of his friends getting hurt in a accident or something like that. But he wants to get back at these gangs who are buying the weapons that he used to make. So he hooks up with his Uncle Joe, played by Richard Roundtree.
And they
build the armor, and like, he's just becomes, you know, he's basically just a vigilante, you know. Like, it's but like, really, just it's just not a good movie. The end of the movie, here's how bad the villain is Judd Nelson.
Awesome. That's bad enough.
Yeah. Can't hear me? Turn it up. he's killed because he shoots Shaquille Steel with a laser while he's in his armor, and it bounces off the armor and comes back and kills him.
That's pretty dumb.
He's killed because he shoots a laser at a shiny thing that then bounces back.
Oh my god.
And kills him.
That's so, the main character doesn't do anything to actually.
He just stood there.
He just stands there, and that's how the villain
dies. He served
died.
In a reflective device. Reflective
oh
surface.
My
exactly.
God!
Exactly.
You know, it's really funny because, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, like, Superman is like one of his favorite things ever. I guess he's got like a time, and as soon as he probably heard, or maybe he was reading the comic books and was like, "Oh, we got to do this!" Like, are you kidding me? Like, sort of like the African American version of Superman. Like, I must be this. I must. What? Where? You know. Get my agent on the phone. Like, how do we do this? So, yes. Well, I know this is all a ploy for me to tell you my Steel audition story. That,
yes, it is.
One of the big impetuses for me, like, walking away from acting. I was just like, I was kind of fed up with everything to begin with, but this was one of the auditions where I was just like, you gotta be effing kidding me. And it was It was an audition where I was going in to read for Steel, and I go into the casting director's office, and it's like one or two lines. There's apparently a scene in the movie, which I think I've seen since then, and whoever got cast in the role, I've seen this clip, deserved it, looked the part, was perfect for it. I knew that I was all wrong for it, but there's a scene in the movie where...
Steel?
I was not out for Steel. I was not.
Dead ringer.
I know. I was close, but whew, missed it by that much. There's a scene in the movie where a cop car pulls up and sees Steel on the street, and they get out of the car and they're like, freeze! And Steel shoots up into the air, and one of the cops says something and is like, oh my gosh, whoa, you know, I can't believe that just happened or something. Well, I was supposed to be one of those cops. Like, I go in to audition. It's one of those auditions where you're just like, all right, whatever. They're just looking for a look. Why am I doing this? But, you know, feeling that the audition was kind of a waste of time anyway, going in, and as soon as I go in, the casting director has two of her giant dogs in the office, circling the desk, walking around the office, and the casting director's like, hi, how are you? And I'm like, there's two dogs. Like, what? I can't have, like, your attention. Like, can't you have the respect of, like, just, like, giving me a second alone, you and me, like, of your... I know it's just, like, a dinky role, and you don't care, but I drove all the way out here into, like, almost Santa Monica, and now I've got to read these two crappy lines with you barely looking at me with two giant dogs in your office barking and walking around. What the hell is this? Yeah, and that's when... Wow. That was, like, one of those moments where I was, like... I don't know if you've ever had an audition like that, Corey, but I had several, and
not
that
like
was,
that, but...
What?
Yeah. Okay.
Not quite with like that, but yeah, I mean,
just like, you got to be kidding me. And the woman looked at me like there was nothing wrong, like just like,
yeah,
no,
yeah, totally normal.
Like, yeah, oh, this is, yeah, great. Like, and it's, yeah, like, really, if you know, because I'm one of those people that it's like you try and treat everyone the same, like whether it's Hugh Jackman or Joe Schmo who walks in the door, you treat them with respect. And if you're not going to have two dogs in the office when Hugh Jackman walks in, you're not going to have two dogs in the office when Christian Horn walks in. It's just, you don't do that, especially to like somebody who absolutely has no power and, you know, obviously no respect in the business. It's like, give them a little bit of dignity. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And this business is, that business is filled with way too many people who are just so blind to that fact, which,
yeah,
is like, so I went in, I read my stop or I'll shoot, and look up into the sky, mouth hanging open, wow, did you see that, blah blah blah, oh, could you do it again, dogs bark bark bark, maybe,
oh,
without,
God,
the mouth hanging open, sure, I'll do it again without the mouth hanging open, you know what I'm saying, just like one of these awful, like, really, this,
were,
whatever,
they barking while you were doing it,
they were like barking, yeah, like before, and they're like walking around and sniffing and walking up to me, and it's two, and they're not small dogs, they are big dogs, you know. And I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. So whoever the casting...
Was it like, you know, stop, ruff, ruff, you know,
no,
during,
no,
your line?
No, because they were such short lines. It was like, go ahead, Steel, and then stop. And then it was like, look up in the sky, blah, blah, blah. And then it was like, ruff, ruff, or sniff, sniff, but right before, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So whoever the casting director was on Steel, it is finally my chance in a public forum to say, go fuck yourself. Thank you very much. Oh, my God. And if I ever met you in person, I would say, go fuck yourself once again, because it's just ridiculous. That is my
That was how you almost became disbelieving officer number two.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. But, Corey, you mentioned another one before we cut you off, Ghost Rider.
Oh, right, yeah. Any of the Nicolas Cage Ghost Riders.
It's really funny because Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance was on cable last night, and I caught about an hour of it.
I haven't seen that one yet, but that first one is one of the worst superhero movies ever.
Talk about a really bad movie, man. Like,
the only bit I've seen of it is, I think recently, somehow leaked or whatever onto the internet, is some footage that they took for special effects reasons.
Yeah.
And so you see Nicolas Cage acting without the flame skull thing effects going on. And he's just sort of doing he's just sort of yelling and I guess maybe changing into the Ghost Rider. I don't know, but he's just doing all these faces and sort of emoting, and it's pretty silly.
You must forward that to me. You must send me that.
I don't know if I can find it. Let me look.
Well, first of all, I mean, you know, Christian, you and I have talked about how Ghost Rider should be done.
Yes,
it should be one of the most awesome superhero movies ever.
It should be, because Ghost Rider, the original Johnny Blaze, was one of my favorite comics when I was a kid. I loved that, and with one of the best endings. It ended on issue, I think, 81 or 71. I can't remember. I don't give a crap about the Danny Ketch Ghost Rider. No, I don't care about Danny. I always hated when they revamped him. I was very excited, and then I saw it and I was like, this is terrible. But the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider, the last maybe like 20 issues of that run were fantastic. Great reading, and great, like, sort of horror mixed with action sort of storytelling.
Exactly. I mean, it's a concept that, like, I mean, you've got a scary looking character, you've got like built-in action and stunts, you know, you've got the supernatural thing. I mean, it should be a home run.
Yeah.
But man, did that movie stink.
Holy cow.
And again, now we're opening up a whole other can of worms. because that's Mark Steven Johnson, right?
Is it?
The director of that, the guy who did Daredevil.
Oh, did he? Really?
Yeah. So I consider putting Elektra on my list.
Yeah. I mean, we're sort of entering into a new realm of iffy Marvel things here. Because,
hold on a second. You're telling me that this guy directed one bad Marvel movie, and then he directed two more?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if he did him.
Actually,
I don't know if he directed
Daredevil first. He did. No, he didn't. I'm sorry.
He directed Daredevil. He directed Ghost Rider.
Daredevil, and then he directed the first Ghost Rider.
And he wrote and directed.
He wrote and directed Daredevil. Wrote and directed Ghost Rider. He only produced Elektra.
And he produced Ghost
Rider and only directed the second Ghost Rider.
Yeah, the second Ghost Rider was that. It's that team who did Crank. Who directed that one?
Well, let me tell you. Let's talk about the first Ghost Rider.
Let's talk about that first one. Yeah. Oh yeah. Let's talk about that.
First of all, I mean, let's just start off by, like, it's hard to start any movie or get into any movie once you've miscast the lead, and that is the biggest mistake that Ghost Rider makes, which is completely miscasting the lead. I'm speechless. I can't believe it. Nicolas Cage, at one point, to me, was one of the most respected and fantastic, like, brilliant actors of his time. And obviously now has just so gone off the rails that it's like, I don't think that he's untalented. I just think that he's trying to cram himself into the sort of everyman or male Superman lead role that he doesn't belong in, you know? And he's too old for the part, and it just doesn't work, and he doesn't work in the role. Like, Johnny Blaze is supposed to be, I mean, in the comics, he's supposed to be young. He's supposed to be, like, kind of a whippersnapper, you know. He doesn't take guff. He's got a giant-sized ego. He thinks he's the greatest stuntman that ever lived. You know, he's Evel Knievel, you know. And you've got Nicolas Cage just with his face twitching and his overacting and his just, like, wigging out.
He's playing him as somebody completely different than the Johnny Blaze in the comics, too.
Exactly.
He's playing, you know, someone who's, you know, trying to avoid his destiny, kind of and honestly, you know, this script, we keep getting sort of back into, you know, the scripts of these things. I mean, just stuff happens in Ghost Rider just to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, you've got the previous Ghost Rider, who is the cowboy one, it's Sam Elliott, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Sam Elliott, you know, and he becomes the cowboy Ghost Rider, you know, and then, you know, he's riding that, you know, flaming horse alongside the, you know, motorcycle, you know, so they have, like, a great shot there, and then, you know, they get over here and, you know, and suddenly Sam Elliott's like, well, you know, I can't go any further, you know, this is as far as I go. It's like, why? Why is that as far as you go? Other than the fact that, like, you know,
the movie isn't called Ghost Rider and Phantom Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like it's sad because you see he was just there for one cool visual.
Sorry. Yeah,
and you know, and he wasn't there to provide anything more than that, and it just drives me crazy.
Yeah. It's really funny because I remember watching this movie on cable, because as soon as Nicolas Cage got cast, I was like, I'm out. I'm not going to see it. I won't go see it. And I'm not going to see it because it's one of my favorite characters and he's calling himself Johnny Blaze and I won't go see it. But I did see it on cable, and I remember that, you know, for anyone out there who doesn't know the story of Ghost Rider, that the original origin of the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider is so terrific. You know, it's so like steeped in like, you know, previous sort of mythology, not of Ghost Rider, but just like, who's the guy who sells himself to the devil and
Faust.
Yeah. And yeah, it's so steeped in that sort of thing and so steeped in sort of like EC Comics, you know, horror lore and that like it's obviously pulling from all that stuff. And I remember watching the movie thinking like, okay, when they address the origin, like they did it, they stuck to the facts of the origin, but the filmmaking was so tepid and the moments of power that you could have had, you know, of emotional loss and just like I got screwed were so vacant from the film that I was just like, how could you be so faithful to the comic book in one way for that segment of the film and just lose the intent and everything else behind the comic, you know, behind the story? And just like, so for anyone who doesn't know Ghost Rider, quickly, he basically is a stunt rider. He's he believes that he's immortal, like, I mean, that he can do no wrong. He's a hotshot. And what ends up happening is his dad, who's a stunt rider, gets cancer, terminal cancer. So basically what ends up happening is the devil, Mephisto, comes to him and says, let's make a deal. I will save your dad if you give me your soul. And so Johnny Blaze is like, okay, it sounds good to me. I'm never going to die or whatever. Let's do it. What could go wrong? I guess he saves his dad from getting cancer, but then he dies in a stunt accident or something like that. Or, right? Am I right? Yeah, I think I'm right. From what I remember, either that or he gets cancer again or something. I think he dies in a stunt accident. Maybe I'm confusing the movie.
No, it's exactly. He's you know, he said, I never said that he wouldn't die from, you know,
something else. Yeah. So, and then what ends up happening is that Johnny Blaze is possessed by the demon, which you don't find out until like way into the series what the demon's name is, I don't think. But the demon Zarathos, who's basically becomes the Ghost Rider. And basically, in moments of tension and danger, you know, that's when the Ghost Rider appears, or like the Hulk almost. Yeah. So he goes on the road, much like Bruce Banner. He's kind of like a fugitive Hulk ripoff, but he's possessed by a demon and not a gamma irradiated monster. So that's the long and short of it.
Plus you have like the whole like 1970s, you know, Daredevil thing, you know, where you've got, you know,
Evil Knievel.
Your Evil Knievel character, you know, in the 70s they were obsessed with that. And even today, you know, it sort of would have worked, you know, with making him more of like an X Games kind of a guy, you know. But they kind of didn't do that. They made him this like sort of like, I don't know, Vegas show stunt guy, you know. I mean, it's like it doesn't work. And you know what Christian said about, you know, about the comic origin being powerful, the movie just completely craps on that, because like, you know, the contract to, you know, where he exchanges his soul, kind of a thing like that, in the comic book, you know, it's a willful thing. In the movie, he accidentally signs the contract because he gets a paper cut and his blood lands on the contract.
What?
It's like, yeah, you know. But then later they're saying, well, you know, you're going to be the most powerful Ghost Rider because, you know, you did it for the right reasons. It's like, it was an accident.
That's so funny.
Sounds stupid.
It is completely haphazard, and again, it's one of my a big missed opportunity too, because I think that Ghost Rider could have been, like, I mean, he's a solid B level Marvel, you know,
yeah,
character. And it could, if they had done it right, it could have just been like one of those sort of come from behind. People would have been like, "Wow, you know what? What is this Ghost Rider thing?" You know, but yeah, it just ended up just sucking the character Ghost Rider's power. You know, besides like the Hellfire stuff, is the thing called the Penance Stare.
Yeah,
where, you know,
and that's a Danny Ketch thing, a '90s revision. Yeah,
exactly. It subjects a person to all the pain that they've ever caused any other human being. Yeah, this movie was a 114 minute Penance Stare for me.
That's awesome. Bravo. Way to bring it around, Paul. That's great. But it's really funny because I was just scanning cable again. I've been sick for like a week, and I was scanning the cable channels yesterday, and Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance was on, and I caught it right at the beginning. I was like, oh, wow. Like, how often do you do that when you're just scanning channels? And I caught it right at the beginning, and while I don't think... Well, again, how far can you go once your lead is miscast? He's miscast. Like, you can't get past that he doesn't fit in the role. He overacts. He's got his tics. But what's really amazing about Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, which I will tell you right now, these guys, it's a director, Mark Neville Dean and Brian Taylor,
right?
You say they're a team, right?
Yeah.
They're really good with the action stuff. I will not, and the Ghost Rider, when he first shows up in the movie, is pretty awesome. Like, I was like, wow, he looks cool. Like, but there is a scene, and this is where I got cut off. I had to stop watching the movie because my daughter came home. They came home from a birthday party, my wife and daughter, and you can't have that on while a six-year-old is in the house. There's a scene where Nicolas Cage, Johnny Blaze, is interrogating a guy he's trying to get information from, and it is the most ridiculously laughable thing I've ever seen. Well, not ever. I've seen some pretty more ridiculous things. But this is like, he's interrogating the guy, and he's like, "You're a bad man, right? Well, there's a guy inside me, and he wants to come out, and he's hungry, and he eats guys like you." And if you could just imagine what my face is doing. Well, you guys don't have to. You can see it on the Google. But anybody who's listening cannot. He's twitching and contorting, and they're doing an effect, you know, where his eye is like turning into half skull, and you know, and he's like trying to act like the creature's trying to come out, and it's so hard for him to keep it back in, and I'm just like, really, man? That has anybody not heard of subtlety? Like, just like, can't you just talk and have the intention in your eyes? And like,
let me tell you something about Neville Dean and Taylor. Like, I actually really enjoy some of their stuff, because I think the Crank movies are, you know, somewhat enjoyable for what they are.
I've never seen
but
it.
Subtlety? They never learned that word, man.
I gotta say, yeah. And the other thing that astounds me is you've got these guys who are, you know, gangsters, and they have guns and stuff. And I don't care how tough you are, if there's a dude with a flaming skull for a head and a motorcycle on fire, you're going to crap yourself and you're going to run the other way. Like, there's no, like, that's the other thing. Like, Ghost Rider shows up and there's no, that's my phone ringing, and there's no, like, disbelief. Like, what are we looking at?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, look, another flaming skull motorcycle rider. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, I mean, there's a million of them.
It's, yeah, it's like, where did this guy come from? Like it's just ridiculous. So I'm very much like, whatever happened to that? Like, in movies today, it seems to, like, be going away. Like, I would just, you know, maybe take a couple of shots while you're running away, but as soon as that dude shows up, that's it. This gig is done. I'm leaving. Bye. Call me a quitter. But that's it, you know? And it's just like, I haven't finished it. I'm sure it's on demand. I kind of want to watch the rest of it.
Demand is such a tricky word when you're
But it's just like, it's not awful, but I feel like it could be so much better. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, we could see another Ghost Rider movie, honestly, because even though this one didn't do very well, I guess worldwide, it's done like $132 million
really?
Of business. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess Nicolas Cage is like a big deal.
Still?
Overseas, yeah. I guess he puts asses in seats.
Well, the flaming skull motorcycle rider is good enough for most people.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. And if I were probably a teenage kid, it might be good enough for me, like a little teenage kid. But the other thing I want to say about Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, and what I noticed, not only in close-ups, but medium shots, is when they frame Nicolas Cage, the top of his head is mysteriously missing in the shot. Like, he's balding, and they've put, like, a wig on him and stuff.
Yeah,
but
they've
cropped that top. They've cropped the top of his head. They are in there, and and the directors
so
know what they're doing.
Yeah. That's they don't want to show you the hole that he's getting his magic mojo poured into in every single shot.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Oh, Ghost Rider. Well, we've gone 2 hours talking about awful superhero movies. I know there's many more where this has come from. Does anyone want to mention a couple of last ones to wrap it up? Or obviously we missed The Shadow. And I know Ian wanted us to mention The Phantom, the Billy Zane Phantom, which you...
And I'm going to have words with him about that. I insist that that's a good movie.
No! It's not a good movie. It's a good adaptation, I think you're thinking.
I think it's a pretty good movie, too.
You think it's like a solid, solid film? I saw that in the theater too.
I think it's a solid film, but I think you may have I believe it's one that's held up better than people remember it to be.
Speaking of the pulp heroes, I never saw The Green Hornet.
Oh,
I never saw that either.
That's really funny that you mentioned The Green Hornet, because I have seen it, and the last time I saw it, I was sick with the fever and the flu was it last year? I caught it on cable, and I turned it off after 20 minutes. It made me sicker. That's how bad it was. It was terrible.
Maybe these bad superhero movies are the source of all of these sicknesses that keep happening.
Oh, my gosh. I remember sitting there, and I watched a couple of movies. Well, that's all you can do is sit in front of the TV, like when you're laid out with a fever. But I remember watching The Green Hornet, and you know, you're not a really demanding audience when you have 103 fever. You just want to be entertained. You're not looking for any, like, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. I was just like, just, you know, kind of make it okay.
Distract me from my
misery, exactly. Yeah. And
don't make it worse.
And Green Hornet could not even do that. And the thing that bugs me about Green Hornet is the original guy who was set to direct it was Shaolin Soccer, right?
That guy. Yeah, yeah.
And he was going to co-star in it as Kato. And for some reason, he left the project. And again, one of those When I Get to Heaven movies, which is like, maybe I'll see a Green Hornet movie that guy directed and he's Kato. Like, really? Like, I would love to see that. And from what I hear, Kevin Smith did a really good job on the comic book series that he wrote for Dynamite. With the Green Hornet, and I want to get a chance to read those, because I think that there's probably a decent amount of potential with that character, and you know, not that it's demanding to be explored, but you know.
Well, you know, one of the interesting thing about the Green Hornet that, you know, I don't think anybody's ever really hit on this in any of the movie or the TV shows or anything like that, is that he's the great grandnephew or something like that of the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, now that we have a Lone Ranger movie coming out, you know.
Crossover.
Well, created by the same guy, correct?
It was the same I'm not sure if they were created by the same guy, but it was definitely the same media company that had them at the time.
Gotcha. Well, we didn't mention also The Shadow, the Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
The Shadow, which...
We haven't mentioned the original Lone Ranger movie either, that 1970... you know, there's a
whole... I
want to
talk about that, because I actually think that Lone Ranger movie, the first half of that Lone Ranger movie is very decent. And then once the mask gets on, it's into the crapper. Like, but once he puts on the suit, it's just, it's terrible.
It sounds like we're going to have to revisit this topic.
Yes, I think so. Well, maybe we can discuss the Lone Ranger, you know, when the movie comes out, when the new movie comes out.
Sounds good.
As long as it's not. All right, so let's wrap this puppy up. Thanks for doing this. This has been Part-Time Fanboy with some of, not all of, our worst superhero movies of all time. Yay, Part-Time Fanboy. Thanks for listening. Part-Time Fanboy.